Well, greetings, Maestro. Here we are for another symphony. What is this, the 38th year or something like that?
39th.
Yeah.
Yeah, next year is our big 40.
And we're coming up on 50 at the radio station. So,
oh, congratulations. Yeah.
Still alive, still kicking.
Keep up the good fight.
Yeah.
Classical music and jazz. And we go right to work. Number 39 kicks off with Glinka, the Ruslan and Ludmilla Overture. Again, have you ever seen that opera?
I haven't. I played the overture in high school band, but That's where I learned it.
Right. I don't think the opera exists any longer. It's one of these things where the overture has lived on, but nobody performs it. Maybe rarely. But as a storyline, it was not very effective. It was a little weak in the text, in the story plot, and the characters weren't that interesting. But again, in like a lot of things, like even some of Rossini's overtures, the overture lives on and is just a wonderful way to start the season. You know, you've heard it many times, and the orchestral arrangement is just full of Russian idioms and ideas and that flair for tempo and flashy. It's a great way to start the concert.
Oh, big time, yeah.
And then we go to Max Bruch. To me, this is one of my favorite violin concertos, number one in G minor. And you know, we've talked about this before, but when Glinka was writing and he was casting, or Puccini, for example, when he was writing an opera and he was coming up with an aria for a tenor, he was writing it specifically for Enrico Caruso. And they were in the same room together. And he'd say, Enrico, sing this for me. How does that feel to you? How does it lay in your voice?
Oh, wow.
How do you feel about it? So he was custom making, tailor making these arias. And in concerti, the same thing happens. They wrote them for specific people. They wrote it with a pianist in mind. Or they wrote it for a violinist who would premiere the piece and then take it on and do this. And they also did it where Bruch would work with a violin soloist that he wrote it for to make sure that it was playable. You remember the Tchaikovsky incident where Tchaikovsky wrote the one violin concerto, which is one of the top concertos in the world, but it was deemed unplayable in the beginning. And he needed many modifications because the violinist said, listen, too many notes. We can't do this. There's too many crossings, too much difficulty. Where it lays well on the piano, it didn't lay well on the instrument for the violin.
The Barber Concerto was the same, wasn't it? That final movement, if I remember.
Exactly. It's still one of the most difficult things to play.
Yeah.
It's technically very, very difficult. But they had people in mind. So now we have this concerto, and because those original players no longer are around, we have to find a player who can play this piece and give it justice the way Bruch wanted it to. It's like going from tailor-made suits or dresses that perfectly fit you, style and sound and interpretation and color, to shopping off the rack now, where how do you find the artist that is going to do justice to the piece? And also not only do justice to the piece, but play it the way I see it, the way I feel it and hear it. Because there has to be this chemistry and understanding of what we want to do on the stage together.
So Ms. Kwan.
Joan Kwan was absolutely, hands down, my first choice. And when you hear her, you'll know why. World class, just getting back from Europe. I mean, fabulous player. She heads the string department at the Cleveland Institute of Music, which is one of the premier schools, conservatories in the country now. The string program is very, very strong. She plays this piece beautifully. You know, it starts off with this very short little timpani roll, and then this little wind, little introduction of just a few bars, and then it starts with a cadenza. It's unheard of in the form, right? Then the orchestra plays that little theme again, and then it goes to another cadenza before the actual exposition of the orchestra takes over. So Bruch right away in four measures has us in the palm of his hand, and you'll already be in love with the player. I mean, that's such a beautiful thing. And I often think to myself, you know, you and I talk because we're music geeks. You know, I mean, we're talking about the eighth note and how it fits into Western civilization, that kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But for people, this is not about the notes and the rhythms and the silence and the rests and the dynamics or the melody. It's about something else. It's about this artist taking this repertoire that this composer had envisioned in his heart, mind, and soul, and realized on paper. And we are going to put this, bring it to life again. And it's about her communicating her heart, mind, and soul through the music to touch our audience. You know, audience members are part of the performance, as we always talk about. And it's not about the rhythm and the sound. That's the tools that we're doing this. But what we're doing is we're communicating. And we're reaching out and grabbing their heart with our heart. And that's what the Brook's going to do. It's an amazing piece with an amazing artist. This is a win-win to start the season. And that's what great masterworks do. That's what the great repertoire, the ones that are the stay around, the ones that are there, like great art that hang in museums, other things fall aside. The great repertoire stays around forever, and this is one of them.
And speaking of great repertoire.
Yeah, this guy named Brahms.
Heard of him.
What a character, huh? What a character. You know, we always talk about he came on the heels of Ludwig van Beethoven, you know, after those nine, and the Ninth Symphony being so monumental, really had trouble putting his pen to paper because he said, how could I do this now? How could I make a difference in the world? How can I say anything after that? Well, he proved that he could. He wrote in his lifetime four major symphonies, but they're epic in size and in importance. And this is number four, his final, the Opus 98 in E minor. And I find this to be just a remarkable work on every level. One of Brahms' orchestration techniques and almost tricks and trait is that he's able to take a theme he might have used in the first movement and then hide it again somewhere else. And you'll hear that in his last movement where he tucks it in maybe in a secondary line, very subtly and soft, but it's there. And he even uses a line of Bach in the last movement and builds upon that. And I think that's genius, when you can take all those elements, work them in, and not make it a study in orchestration, but a magnificent piece of art. Just glorious.
Well, let's tell them a little bit about that last movement, because it's a chaconne.
That's right.
If you're not familiar with that term, it's like a theme and variation.
Right, that keeps repeating itself, right?
But a much shorter phrase,
exactly.
Usually in the bass line, but I used to count it, and it gets on something like
right.
30 or 40.
You're exactly
repetitions.
Right, and that's what he's doing. He's building on that the entire thing.
And the magic of that is you get into it and you forget that it's this repeating pattern, because the way he orchestrates it and changes the harmony.
That's correct. That's his hiding that concept, yet it's still there. You're still hearing it. It just takes your ear away from it for a moment,
yeah.
But it's still there. This is just pointing back that great composers like Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven, they're still writing with Bach in their head, because those rules that Bach wrote, those four-part harmonization rules about, you know, no parallel thirds or fifths, contrary motion, what to double in a chord, you know, you don't want to be doubling the fifth all day long, and all these different rules, and that the seventh resolves this way, and the Neapolitan sixth chord resolves that way. I mean, these are rules that we still live by today that Bach wrote. I mean, this was the genius. And those writing principles still exist today in every conservatory and music school, including Murray State, to this day. Then Brahms took it to another level, and that's what great musicians do. They change the world, they make it a better place, and that's what this performance is going to be about. It's going to be about discovering and taking this journey together with the audience.
So come on out to the Carson Center, 7:30, Saturday night. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. We're going to see Joan Kwan. And after the performance in the lobby, we're going to all toast together to our 39th season.
Hey, don't miss it.
Salute.